Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dorothy Gundy, Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, Anne Ball, and Dan Friedel. Later, we will have this week's education report. Now, here is our first story.
U.S. President Barack Obama arrived in Laos Monday for a 3-day visit to the Southeast Asian country. His visit shows how far Laos has stepped out of the shadows of its larger, influential neighbors, China and Vietnam. Since the days of French colonial rule in Southeast Asia, Vietnam has influenced Laos, both culturally and politically. The Communist Party came to power in Laos during the Vietnam War. By the time of the 1975 Communist Revolution, most party officials had spent time in Vietnam. Many of them even spoke the Vietnamese language. Nguyen Ngao Trung is a former Vietnamese diplomat. He now directs a foreign policy research center. He says Vietnam's government now considers Laos a very important neighbor. Yet some observers would say China's government has more influence than Vietnam. They note the size of China's development aid programs in Laos. Chinese media say China's foreign direct investment in Laos exceeded $1 billion in 2015. By comparison, Vietnam has a small foreign direct investment in Laos, Trung said. He added, Laos cannot compete with what he describes as China's economic invasion of Laos. Ho Kham Zoi is with the Center for Southeast Asian Studies in Ho Chi Minh City. Zoi said Vietnamese nationals are still interested in Laos and its language, but that the level is low. Some want to learn the Laotian language to travel to the country to study, to do business, and to settle there with their family. During his visit to Laos, Obama is dealing with issues resulting from past U.S. policies. In the 1960s and 1970s, the U.S. military dropped bombs on villages and rural areas in Laos as America's war with Vietnam crossed the border. The Lao government estimated that more than 2 million tons of bombs were dropped during more than 500,000 bombing raids. The government estimated that one bomb fell every 8 minutes for 9 years. Millions of cluster bombs fell to the ground in the countryside, but failed to explode. But over the years, many of these tennis ball-sized bombs did explode, killing and wounding civilians. On Tuesday, Obama met with Laotian President Bunyang Vorachit in the presidential palace. After the meeting, the Obama administration announced plans for a three-year, $90 million program for a national study of unexploded ordnance and efforts to clear the bombs. Given our history here, I believe the United States has a moral obligation to help Laos heal, Obama said. The Obama administration also said the two countries launched a new period in relations based on a shared desire to heal the wounds of the past and build a foundation for the future.
Vietnam's middle class is growing faster than anywhere else in Southeast Asia. Exports of goods manufactured in the country have created jobs and increased pay. As people's buying power increases, so has conspicuous consumption. That phrase describes spending money on costly goods and services to show a person's wealth. It is a way people might try to show their economic power. The Boston Consulting Group says Vietnam's middle and affluent class is expected to double to 33 million people by 2020. The business group considers people earning $714 or more a month members of Vietnam's middle class. By 2020, the group says, about one-third of the country will be defined as middle class. In 1987, Vietnam opened the country to foreign investment. Since 2012, it has dealt with issues like labor and the exchange value of its money, the dong. Vietnam is a member of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. It is one of 12 countries that have signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. Vietnam also has signed trade deals with Europe. Companies manufacturing goods for export in Vietnam like the low operating costs in the country. Foreign factories have helped the local economy. The factories have created related businesses that supply stores and provide financial services. Vietnam regularly raises the minimum amount workers can be paid. To save money, workers often live with family to save on housing costs. Some employers say it is hard to find skilled people to do higher-level office work. So, people who can perform these jobs get paid higher wages. Aparna Bharadwaj covers Southeast Asia for the Boston Consulting Group. She said, unlike other emerging Asian countries, Vietnam's government investment in agriculture has created a rural middle class. She said the middle class has moved quickly into smaller towns and rural markets and is spread widely among the population. Boston Consulting Group says the average income per person in Vietnam will rise from $1,400 in 2014 to $3,400 by 2020. A sign of increased wealth in the country's financial center of Ho Chi Minh City is increased traffic jams. Among the vehicles are costly cars and motorcycles built by Honda and Yamaha. Those are considered status brands by Vietnamese. Restaurants serve foreign foods, which are more expensive than local food. They fill up at night with loud groups of people showing off their Apple and Samsung mobile phones. Some people are so status conscious that they might have less furnishings in their homes so they can spend more on items others can see. Oscar Mussens works for Dizan Shira and Associates in Ho Chi Minh City. He says if you go inside a Vietnamese house, they might not have a lot of things.
They would probably eat on the floor, but still they will have a mobile phone or a motorbike, because this is what they see, they can show from the outside. It's not only about being middle class, but also about showing that they're middle class.
Tom Nguyen is a 36-year-old office worker in Ho Chi Minh City. Her wages have gone up more than 10% in 2 years. She eats out with her family on weekends and spent $5,000 for a trip for 4 people to Japan. She says she likes to spend money on traveling and tourism. She decided to save some money to buy property in the next 5 years. Growth in Vietnam's middle class means foreign companies are competing in many different areas. These include fast food restaurants, dairy products, hygiene, consumer electronics, and vehicles. Foreign companies with businesses in the capital include Burger King, Starbucks, Family Mart, Nestle, and Sony. U.S.-based computer company Dell says people prefer different companies depending on where they live in the country. One business development manager says, in the north, people like European companies, while those in the south like American and Japanese ones. Dell now brings attention to providing service to customers after a sale to build trust in their products. I'm Mario Ritter.
Election officials in the United States are working to stop threats to the election system from cyber attackers. And Democrats in Congress are calling on the Federal Bureau of Investigation to investigate reports that Russia may be planning to try to affect the presidential election in November. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid recently sent a letter to FBI Director James Comey. The letter said the threat of Russia tampering with the elections is more extensive than widely known. The prospect of a hostile government actively seeking to undermine our free and fair elections represents one of the gravest threats to our democracy since the Cold War. 4 senior House Democrats asked the FBI to investigate officials in the campaign of Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. In a letter, the representatives said they want to know if the officials worked with Russia to carry out recent attacks against the Democratic National Committee and Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee to interfere with the U.S. presidential election. Federal officials are increasingly worried about the possibility that foreign hackers particularly those working for Russia, could enter the computer systems of American states and disrupt the presidential election. Timothy Caron works at the Mendoza College of Business at the University of Notre Dame. In an interview with VOA, he said he believes this election will probably start to showcase the future around problems we'll have with electronic voting. Tim Erlin is the Senior Director of Information Technology Security and Risk Strategy at Tripwire, a cybersecurity company. He said he believes cyber attacks will take place during the election in November. There have already been cybersecurity incidents related to the election.
James Andrew Lewis works at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a public policy research group in Washington. He told VOA that hacking for political purposes or coercive purposes is new and dangerous. Lewis said Russian hackers are skilled. He said the recent reported cyber attacks may be taking place in preparation for the election in November. That might suggest that, if they wanted to, they could do something, a lot more at election time, he said. Lewis believes it would be difficult for the hackers to change the result of an election. That is because, he said, cyber attackers would have to illegally enter a large number of local, computerized voting machines. But he said it is possible that people could doubt the result of the election if the hackers are able to illegally enter state voting systems that combine vote totals from towns and cities. Lewis said it is more likely that the hackers will attack wireless voting machines. If they do, he said, it may cause people to not believe the reported vote totals. It's something to be worried about for November, he said.
Federal agencies are increasing the strength of their computer security systems to prepare for the November 8th elections. And they are working with the states as they do the same. The Department of Homeland Security, the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, and the Department of Justice are helping state officials limit the threats to their voting systems.
Harvey Kushner is the director of the Homeland Security and Terrorism Institute at Long Island University. He has trained workers at federal agencies, including the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. He told VOA, the government has not been very sophisticated in dealing with cyberspace. He noted the problems several years ago with the website of the Affordable Health Care Act. The website had many problems when it was first introduced. But Lewis says the federal government has many ways to fight cyber attacks. In addition to the FBI's counter-hacking capabilities, the government has a large intelligence-gathering network and works with private cybersecurity companies.
Timothy Caron says officials are working hard to stop cyber attacks during the elections, but he says they cannot stop them all. He says attacks are going to happen, and how we recover from it is going to be a challenge. Tim Erlin says the most effective approach to stopping cyber attacks
is to identify possible threats and put defenses in place to guard against them. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
The number of elephants living in Africa continues to drop. A survey reporting on elephant counts was released last week. It shows the future of the species is in trouble. Elephants are facing extinction in parts of the Republic of Congo, Cameroon, and Zambia, according to the Great Elephant Census. The study estimated a population of 352,271 elephants in the 18 countries surveyed. That is a drop of nearly 150,000 elephants since 2007. The researchers say the population has been falling by about 8% each year. The GEC points out one large reason for the decrease in the elephant population. Ivory poaching has led to the lower numbers of elephants in most of the countries surveyed. Even more troubling is where the dead elephants are being killed. The study reported a high number of carcasses, around 12 for every 100 live elephants, are being found on protected grounds. This number was highest in Cameroon. There, 83 carcasses were found for every 100 live elephants. Many of the elephants were victims of killing by poachers for their ivory. Many of these protected areas for wildlife are located on Africa's savannas. Savannas are large, flat areas of land with grass and very few trees. The GEC was started in 2014. Its job is to monitor savanna elephants across Africa. All other studies and counts of elephants before this survey were estimates. The survey was conducted by air. Researchers in dozens of airplanes counted the animals as they flew over the groups of elephants. The census also used video cameras to help count the elephants. I'm Anne Ball.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. At the beginning of September, children in many countries return to school. In classrooms all over, students sit in lines of desks facing the teacher. The teachers talk about the subject of study. The students listen. They raise their hands to let the teacher know when they have a question or an answer. But this is not how things are done at Escuela Nueva schools. There, students of the same grade level sit together in small groups. They work on a lesson at their own speed. They work individually, but also help each other learn the lesson. Then, the older students in the room help the younger students understand the lesson before moving on to another. Teachers at Escuela Nueva schools do not stand in front of the classroom and lecture. The teaching method is a model of democratic values. Students are involved in every element of how the school operates. they make decisions about how and what they learn. For example, classmates elect students for leadership roles and to perform jobs such as cleaning and social activities. Educating children is one of the biggest challenges in the poorest parts of the world. Many rural schools, for example, have only one classroom. This means they teach students of mixed grade levels at the same time. Escuela Nueva uses these limitations as a strength and is quickly becoming a model for the world's classrooms.
The phrase Escuela Nueva means new school in Spanish. The name fits, as this learning method is not like that used in traditional schools. These schools make it easy for students to learn at their own speed and return to school after long absences. Clara Victoria Colbert developed the model in the mid-1970s in Colombia. Colbert believes that Escuela Nueva improves peaceful social interactions through its focus on democratic values, cooperation, and empathy. Colbert describes the method as cooperation in action. The Spanish word convivencia means living together or coexistence. This is central to learning in Escuela Nueva schools. Another example of convivencia is that parents and teachers work together to make decisions about the schools. Today, the Escuela Nueva model is widely praised because of its long list of successes. Students at these schools attend classes at a higher rate, have better academic success, and drop out at a lower rate. According to the New York Times, in Colombia alone, there are now 20,000 Escuela Nueva schools. About 20 other nations have started schools using the Escuela Nueva model, including Vietnam, Uganda, India, Brazil, and the Philippines. Nearly 5 million children worldwide attend Escuela Nueva schools. Organizations such as the World Bank, UNESCO, and UNICEF, as well as non-governmental groups and private investors, help to finance and establish the schools.
When Colbert developed Escuela Nueva in the 1970s, there were many educational problems in Colombia. There were very few teachers. The minimal training and low cost of Escuela Nueva schools gave them an advantage. Another advantage is that students do not fail a grade level due to absences. They can return to school at any time. Escuela Nueva students gain real-world skills they can use in their communities. Real-world skills have gained support from the United Nations and other international organizations. These skills include collaboration, creativity, and critical thinking, as well as leadership.
Rebecca Winthrop is an education expert at the Center for Universal Education at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. She recently told NPR that Escuela Nueva's focus on student leadership, teamwork, and community could make it an educational model for the future. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.